Welcome everybody to the Parsha class of Vayakhel and Pekudei. Now, it's not this week, Parsha is not Vayakhel and Pekudei, it's just Pekudei. Vayakhel was last week, but we did not discuss Vayakhel, or rather we chose to discuss more of Kisisa, because we're studying the commentary of Rav Yerucham Lubavitch, the Mashgiach, the spiritual leader of the Mir Yeshiva of Poland. Rav Yerucham passed away in 1936, so this was all written prior to that. And he has much to write on Kisisa. We didn't cover it in the first week, so we spent another week on it, and little, relatively, to speak about Vayakhel and Pekudei. So we decided to put Vayakhel and Pekudei both into this week. There's very little, there's really only four pages in his entire paper devoted to Vayakhel and Pekudei. So when I say there's a little, that is in quantity. But in quality, it's vast and immense, because he shares with us in the commentary to Vayakhel one of the secrets of success, the secret to success. And one would might even be surprised that this is coming out of a Torah commentary. But I'm glad to see it in print, and I'm glad to see him deal with it, because I've heard about it, I've intuited it from my years at Yeshiva, but I don't know if I've ever really seen it in print, this idea that I'm going to share with you. So the pasuk, everyone has a chumash here, so let's open up to Parshas Vayakhel, Perek Lamed Hei, 35. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, 21. Just a brief summary of the Parshios leading up to this point. Several weeks ago, we started Terumah. Terumah is a Parsha in which God instructs Moshe that there's going to be a tabernacle, a Mishkan, and that the people are going to be asked to contribute materials, and that there is a very detailed building plan, exactly how everything is supposed to be constructed and fit together. Tetzaveh, the Parsha, goes on further with the making of the special garments. Again, Hashem giving the detailed instructions to Moshe. And then we had Kisisa, which was took a little bit of a break because it went back to the narrative of Moshe on the mountain and the making of the golden calf and the aftermath, which we discussed last week. And then it goes back to the Mishkan. Vayakhel and Pekudei is the repetition of these instructions, the same detailed instructions from Moshe now to the Jewish people, relaying the very instructions that he had received from Hashem, this time telling the Jewish people, particularly the supervisor of the construction project, whose name was, who remembers the name of the chief, Bezalel, and he had an assistant, Ahaliyav. So he's like kind of the main character here, but the Torah repeats the instructions again by Yakel and Pekudei, the instructions for the garments again. And then at the end of Pekudei, then the Torah narrates how they did everything. So you almost have like three recountings of the same information, which is a discussion in itself, why the Torah goes on and on and on to give so much detail and repeating detail about the Mishkan. I might comment on that later on, just as an aside to our main theme. So here we go. Vayavau kol ish asher nisa'o libo, pasuk 21. V'chol asher nadva rucho oso, heviu es trumas Hashem, limleches ha'ol moed, ulechol avodaso, ulevigdei ha'kodesh. Okay, the translation in Art Scroll. Every man whose heart inspired him came, and everyone whose spirit motivated him brought the portion of Hashem for the work of the Tent of Meeting, for all its labor, and for the sacred vestments. Okay. Simple, right? Okay, the Ramban, Nachmanides, is quoted by Rabbi Rucham on this verse. The Tam, I'm going to quote the excerpt here. The Tam Asher Nisa'o Libo L'Karva El HaMalacha. The reason that it states whose heart inspired, whose heart motivated him, whose heart inspired him, the reason why that was written, L'Karva El HaMalacha, to bring him forward to do the work or to contribute, because there was actually nobody in the Jewish nation that had ever had any training from an artisan, from a master, about how to do these different crafts. In fact, there was nobody that ever had any training in fine motor skills, if you will. Because the only kind of work that they had done in Mitzrayim was heavy construction, schlepping, loading big stones on wagons, and putting them on a building.
Making the pyramids.
Yeah, basically. They never did any kind of craftsmanship. So, how are they in the world are they going to build this Mishkan? Aval matza betivo sheyada lasos came. What's incredible here is that the people that came forward found, just out of nowhere, that they found in their nature the ability to do whatever was required. Vayigba libo midarkei Hashem lavo lifnei Moshe lemorlo. And each person that came forward came with a raised heart. I think it's quoting the verse, the source is not given. His heart was raised in the ways of Hashem. To come before Moshe and say, Ani aseh kol asher Adoni dover. I'm going to do whatever my master speaks. What that means is, and the Ramban is saying, that what Moshe came with, Hashem presented Moshe with, the challenge, the instructions, the command to build the Mishkan, was, by all stretches of the imagination, an impossible task. It was like coming to to a group of youngsters and say, "Please build a new stadium for the Atlanta Braves." It's impossible. They don't have the money. They don't have the strength. They don't have the know-how. Nothing. Moshe comes. Hashem tells Moshe to go to the Jewish people and say, this is what we have to do. We have to raise all this kind of money, and we have to build an intricate building. And nobody here has any idea how to do construction. And yet, they did it. So what the Torah is trying to communicate with us, how did they do it? And so the answer is, Kol ish asher nisa'o libo, v'chol asher nadva rucho oso heviu. Every man whose heart inspired him and everyone whose spirit motivated him brought. That's the answer. The answer is that they were able to accomplish it because of motivation and inspiration and the willingness to step forward to say, we will do it. If you got these words, these instructions from God, and you came to us to tell it to us, we know, we trust you, we trust God, we'll do it. You wouldn't be asking us to do it if we couldn't do it. So we'll do it. And as soon as they accepted the challenge,
they found it within themselves that they had all of the abilities to make it happen. This is awesome. This is incredible. This is absolutely incredible. So Rabbi Yerucham takes this Ramban and he discusses, and he uses a term which I had never seen before. It's kind of a sophisticated Hebrew term. The word is, he gives the Hebrew and he gives the Yiddish. So I hope there's somebody here that's a little bit fluent in Yiddish and maybe able to help me out. The Hebrew term is Yazmas, and the Yiddish word is Unternehmen.
Yeah, the undertook.
Undertaking?
Mm-hmm.
Unternehmen. Undertaking, okay. Not being an undertaker.
No.
I looked it up in the Alkali Hebrew English Dictionary for Yazma, and it's got a whole bunch of listings, a whole bunch of forms of it, and it always comes down to two words, either enterprise or initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Rabbi Yerucham says that this is the key to success. It is the key to success in spiritual matters, and it is the key to success in material matters. He goes on to say that if you look around in world history at the rich people, the real ha'ashirim ha'gadolim, the great wealthy ones, rubam kekulam, most of them, almost all of them, came to their money, came to their success because they had monumental enterprising or initiative or undertaking. It's because of their ambition. That's how they got to where they got. No. You might ask, are we leaving God out of the picture? No. God, what did we just learn? That if you have the initiative, if you have the enterprising spirit, God will give you what you need to fulfill your ambition. That's exactly what happened with these craftsmen. They weren't prepared beforehand, but because they had the ambition, they had the enterprise, the initiative, God equipped them with all that they needed to succeed. I saw, in this regard, maybe it was from this source, a nice, like a bumper sticker or on a bulletin board in a Jewish school, the phrase, God doesn't call the equipped, God equips the called. You step forward, you take the initiative, and God will give you what you need to succeed. So really, yes, everything's in God's hands, but how does God determine who should get what? Very often, He will look for the people that have initiative, not ability, initiative. Where does the initiative come from? Where does it come from? To come from your brains? It comes from your heart. Remember our classes? We actually had two classes about this. Rabbi Yerucham said everything comes from the heart. And even intelligence is a function of the heart. We can understand why. Because it's the heart that with which a person shows initiative, ambition, drive. It's not the brain. It's the heart. If the heart is motivated, then God will endow that individual with intelligence, with resources, wealth, whether it be material or spiritual. So this is the theme. The theme of the Parsha, the theme of the whole story of Bezalel and all of the craftsmen is, you take initiative, you will succeed. He quotes various things. There's a midrash that you may have heard this before. Shlomo HaMelech, we know, knew all of the animals, the animal kingdom. He could even communicate with them. And he pointed out what we can learn from each creature. And one of the lessons is, oh, you lazy one, go and watch the ant working. Lech el nemala atzel.
That's a verse in Mishlei. O lazy one, go look at the ant. And he describes how the Midrash goes on to say, what does the ant... Did I say ant the first time?
Yes.
Yeah. What does the ant do? The ant, first of all, he gathers wheat and he stores it up in his hole, which is his dwelling. And he amasses great quantities of wheat, a kernel at a time. And he stores it up. Now, the truth is that ants' lifespan is, on the average, 6 months. Every ant. In that amount of time, he eats, if I'm understanding this correctly, about 1.5 kernels of grain. And yet he amasses much, much more. The Midrash says, why does the ant amass so much grain? Because it's thinking... I don't know how he knows this. Midrash, God's wisdom. He's thinking, maybe I'll live longer than 6 months. So just in case, I ought to have a storehouse and a reserve. A reserve? You know, thousands of percentage points more than he needs, and probably won't live longer. But just in case. So he says, imagine this. An ant who has little power, little needs, the chances of him needing this is so slim, and yet he still puts forth the effort to work. He still has the initiative, goes through the undertaking to work so much to gather this. So, kal vachomer, you know, how much more so a person who has great abilities and strengths, who has great needs, who has needs that go beyond the here and now. We have great spiritual needs because we have to provide, put away mitzvahs and merits for the world to come, which is for eternity. And that's a sure thing. That's not a maybe. We certainly should be at least as enterprising as the ant. We should be hoarding those mitzvahs and storing them away and gathering more and more and more because we're sure going to need them. It's just, it's a different perspective. I mean, Rav Yerucham says, if you see a person who has enterprise, who is a Baal Yazma, that person is going to be great. If you see a person that doesn't, lacks that enterprising spirit, that is just satisfied to sit, I don't need so much, I'll just sit in my little corner, he says, that person is from the dwarfs. I mean, it sounds like everything, it's really up to us. It's really up to us. Hashem, of course, is giving us the power, but he wants to see what kind of initiative we have. We take the initiative. There's no limit to how much he will equip us to succeed and to accomplish our goals. He cites also the famous phrase from the Talmud, Chayav Adam Lomar. A man is obligated, a person is obligated to say, Mosai Yagiu Masai Lamasei Mosai, Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov. When will my deeds approach the deeds of the forefathers, Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov, I'm sure for the women, the matriarch, Sarah Rivka Rachel Leah. Really? A person is obligated to say that? That's an obligation? I never heard of that obligation. There's an obligation to give tzedakah, there's an obligation to eat kosher, there's an obligation to daven, there's an obligation to keep Shabbos. I never heard that there was an obligation for me to say, when are my deeds going to be like the deeds of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? What kind of an obligation is that? And yet, that is what the Torah says. The oral Torah. A person is obligated. If a person doesn't set his sights to the highest level, he's shirking his duty. He's shirking responsibility. Because if he only would, Hashem would help him get there. I mean, maybe he won't get to be like Abraham, but he'll get to be so great according to what he's able to do.
But if he doesn't strive, if he doesn't shoot for the stars, you know, I'm sure, to use the old sports analogy, if the little kids that played basketball didn't aspire to be like Michael Jordan, they wouldn't even be on, they wouldn't even make the team. It's because they set their heights, their sights on the highest achievers. That's why they were able to accomplish what they could accomplish. They won't be Michael Jordan, but maybe they'll make the team. Maybe they'll make the junior league, or maybe they'll even make high school or college. And one out of a thousand will make the pros. But without drive, without initiative, without enterprise, nothing's going to happen. So I said, I'm glad to see this in print. We would almost think, sure, this is a, it sounds like a secular idea. It sounds like something that you would hear from the, you know, the Olympic athletes. You know, the only way you're going to make it to the Olympics is if you practice. Or, you know, the musicians. How do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Right? I'm sure in every field out there they have this kind of ethic, this kind of. According to Rabbi Yerucham, not only is this a Jewish concept, but this is a moral obligation, and this is actually the greatest determining factor of how a person succeeds. In both spiritual and material paths. It's another example. We really just discussed it last week when Hashem appeared to Moshe in the burning bush and called out to him. It says Moshe hid his face because he was afraid to look towards God. He knew that that was the presence of God there. He didn't want to look there. Later in last week's Parsha, Kisisa, you know, 2 weeks ago, when Moshe was trying to appeal to Hashem for mercy and for forgiveness for the sin, he asked Hashem to reveal His glory, His glory to him. And you know what Hashem answered him? He gave him a lot. He gave him the 13 attributes, but he said to him, according to the tradition, the oral tradition, he says, when I wanted to share my glory with you, kishabikashti, when I sought you out, when I was ready to give you the full exposure, lo bikashta, you didn't take the opportunity. And now that you have woken up late as a result of this terrible situation, and now all of a sudden you want me to reveal myself, I can't do it. In other words, Moshe was punished because he didn't take the opportunity to climb higher. He was too humble, or he was too modest, which has its merits too. But apparently Hashem was rebuking Moshe for not being ambitious enough and not undertaking to go as far as he could go. So this is another example. A person will be called to take an accounting on how far he tried, what his ambitions were, and not to short sell himself. This is an amazing principle. Yes.
Didn't Moses feel that he went as far as he could go because he got so frustrated?
Well, this is all at the very beginning when Moshe was a shepherd in the land of Midian, where Hashem tried to appear to him in the burning bush. That was his first exposure. Moshe had no responsibilities at that time. Hashem was opening himself up, and it says Moshe turned away. He didn't take the plunge to the greatest degree. And later on, that came back to haunt him. Any other comments on this? This is an incredible insight here.
Rabbi,
yes.
Yes, it is. It's a very Jewish thought. But, hey, it has its roots here. But one of the better-known English poets, Robert Browning, wrote a line, and he wrote about Jewish thoughts. But his line was, a man's reach should exceed his grasp, else what's a heaven for? Meaning, you have to reach out to touch something, even though you can't grasp it. Otherwise, why try to go to heaven? So it's a universal thought.
It is.
Motion.
Yeah. Oh,
I was just thinking, as you said that, I was thinking of the daughter of Paro.
Right.
She saw the baby in the river, and she stretched out her hand. And the Talmud says that her hand extended much further than her capacity. So the question is, well, why did she stretch it out if she knew her hand wouldn't reach by natural means? And that's the answer. She had that spirit. You've got to shoot beyond your means. And when she did that, Hashem made it happen. Hashem made her succeed. That's exactly. So it is universal because it is universal.
It is.
It's universal, but it's just it's completely Jewish. I mean, it's not. This is one of the most important principles of Judaism. You have to have an ambition. You have to strive. In both spiritual and material ways.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to shoot for the stars. Literally.
So what you're saying is that humility is a means to an end. Humility cannot be an end to itself. Because Moshe was the most humble. But his humility was a means for him to be able to reach out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We may think that the two are contradictory. Humility and ambition. They're not. You have to be humble because, again, a person has to realize that his success comes from God. But his ambition comes from himself. And then God will give him the success. What was I thinking? There's an expression. God, he says, Vayigba libo. His heart was high. Now, there's a bad kind of highness of the heart. That's haughtiness. When your heart starts to look down on others, that's misusing this power of raising oneself, raising one's heart. I once heard Rav Aaron Feldman talk about, you know, gava. Gava is the word for conceit. Right? That's considered to be the worst of all of the character traits. But yet he said there's something called gava de kedusha. Conceit isn't the right word, but the elevation of holiness. Gava is bad. Gava de kedusha is necessary. Is an obligation. One has to elevate himself, seek to achieve and to accomplish, and to grow. In spiritual and material ways, one has to have ambition. One can't be an upsale. One has to be like an ant, and work and go beyond the here and now, because a person does have those needs. It's not extraneous. And at the same time, when you deal with others, not to be haughty, not to be conceited, not to look down on anyone, and not to for a moment forget our utter dependence on Hashem. But Hashem wants us to raise ourselves, to think big. This is the Jewish perspective. Okay, I'll just share a quick thought on the beginning of Pekudei. If you look on page 530. Ela fukudei hamishkan, mishkan ha'edus. Now share pukad al pi Moshe. These are the reckonings of the tabernacle of testimony.
which were reckoned at Moses' bidding. Now, something kind of sticks out, jumps out at you. Anybody want to express something that seems like a question in the first verse?
Why the tabernacle twice?
Why the tabernacle twice? These are the reckonings of the tabernacle of testimony. It could have, for the same money, these are the reckonings of the tabernacle of testimony. So clearly that's a word that requires explanation. So Rashi says, HaMishkan Mishkan, Shnei Pamim, two times. Remez LaMikdash, this is an allusion to the Beis HaMikdash, Shenitz Mashken B'Shnei Chorbanim, which was taken as a Mashkon. Now the word Mashkon is related to the word Mishkan. Mashkon means a collateral. As in, when somebody has a debt and cannot pay it, so the creditor may come and take some of his property in lieu of payment. That's what a mashkon is. And the Beis HaMikdash was taken as a collateral twice for the sins of Israel. And this is another insight into the word mishkan, because mishkan we think of as coming from the word dwelling, shochein. A shochein is a neighbor, or a shchuna is a neighborhood. So a mishkan is a place of the dwelling of God in our midst. But it also has the connotation of mashkon, of collateral. And he gives an analogy. If somebody owes money, but he is wealthy, so he doesn't have a problem. If he doesn't pay, he's got plenty of assets that can be used to give to his creditor. And this way he will not be in, you know, he won't be in any trouble.
Are we to understand then that we were told in advance that we'd lose the two temples?
I don't think this was given to them as a prophecy. I mean, maybe it was. This is a remez, an allusion, which means it is not the simple pshat of the verse. Maybe they did understand that. But the way to understand the Churban, the destruction of the temple, we can look at it as a tragedy, or we can look at it and say, we sinned, so we owe. We've got to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the poor man, if he owes and can't pay, he may be sold into a slavery. Right? The creditor might come and take him.
Mm-hmm.
The wealthy man, if he owes money, so he'll give him some of his assets. So, why were the temples destroyed? Because we owed God. But we had these wonderful assets, the two temples. And so when we owed, he came and he said, do you have any assets to give me? And if you can give me your assets, I won't take it out on you. And that's what the temple was. The temple was those pieces of collateral. And God took them and spared the Jewish people.
But when we need them, why doesn't he give them back? Like,
maybe we haven't paid. Maybe,
we return at night.
That's good. Steve's asking a question. It says that if you take a collateral from someone and he only has one and he needs it, you have to give it back to him every day so that he could use it. So you say, we need the temple, so God should give us back the temple. The answer is, I guess, first of all, he gave us something to use instead. He gave us our little sanctuaries, our shuls. He said, I know you need something. I'll give you the shul. I'll give you the house of study. But there's another idea, too, which we spoke about a few weeks ago, which is that we asked the question, why doesn't God give us the prophets now? We need them even more. Why doesn't God give us the temple? We need them even more. But we know that in order for us to receive something, we have to ask for it. We have to petition for it.
So don't
and
we do that every time?
Well, we may say the words, but God knows and looks into our hearts, and he sees whether we're really ready and whether we're really
making ourselves like those people. Hashem presented the Mishkan to people that had that aspiration, and they couldn't live without God in their midst. Are we clamoring for that? Are we clamoring for God to be in our midst? Are we? We know we're saying the words, "Hasheva su'avoda ledvir beisecha," return the service in your house. But are we just saying the words, or do we actually live our lives and show that we want nothing more than to have God's presence, and we're willing to come together and work together and to do all this kind of work that seems impossible? You know, we're also being asked every day. I wanted to come back to the emphasis on the Mishkan. I mentioned it earlier. Why does the Torah spend so much time on the Mishkan? And the truth of the matter is, building the Mishkan is our occupation. Always. It's not just a project. Building the Mishkan is the definition of a Jew's occupation in the world. Making place in our lives for God. We are called upon to build the Mishkan every day. What that means, in other words, not just the physical structure, but the concept of having a Mishkan is having God live in our lives. So that's our job. The reason why the Torah spends so much time about the building of the Mishkan is that is the primary occupation of the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. You know, the other mitzvahs that we do, this creates structure. There are certain mishpatim that we have to, in order to be proper kinds of people. There are chukim, there are statutes that we don't really understand, there are eidos, there are certain testimonies that we have to do. But what is our primary occupation? What is the occupation of a Jew? Building a Mishkan. Creating place, space in our lives for God. And that is really the main job of a Jew. So that's why the Torah speaks about it so much. And if we, in order for us to have the temple back, we have to be like those people whose heart motivated them to come forward and said, we want to do that. And even though we don't know, we don't see where we're going to have the abilities, but we'll come forth anyways. And if you give us the commandments, we will do everything you say. So we need to come forward. We need to volunteer. It's not really a volunteerism, it's really an obligation. If we don't volunteer, then there's something lacking. We have to come forward. And if we all come forward, Hashem will give us back the Mishkan.
Shkoyach.